Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, and I'm finally back from Mexico. So, boy, I could talk for 3 hours on that trip, but I'm not going to. But it was quite interesting. I sent out an email to a lot of the people on our newsletter about some of the events there, but I tell you, I came back totally cleaned out and probably about 15 pounds lighter, and thanks to that Mexico diet, you know, drinking the water. So anyway, but overall, it was an amazing trip. You know, I feel like a lot healthier and for the better, and got to do a lot of treks through the jungle. And while I was in Mexico, it was phenomenal. It seems like Tijuana, Guadalajara, Mexico City, there was just all kinds of crazy UFO sightings. They're all over YouTube, and I sent a lot of them out on the list if anybody wants to check them out. I also did a small lecture there and showed everybody the latest and what's going on. Showed a lot of the latest footage of the UFOs flying right overhead with about 300 people on the ground that we have here. And they just loved it. And about four of them right after the talk walked outside on the beach, looked up, and a beautiful UFO flew right over their heads. So it's nice to have the backup on that, you know. So, you know, people do think you're a little crazy when you talk about these things. But it's good to have some backup. I'm supposed to announce here that the East City Ranch documentary is now on YouTube for free. And so if you go to the Mapmakers, their YouTube channel, you can watch the new documentary that about the ranch here. And it's also on the East City Stargate, and it's on the Facebook, on James Gillen Facebook. So if you want to check out that documentary for free, it's a wonderful gift by the Mapmakers who put this documentary together. And I guess they're shooting for a million views on this thing. So I think we'll get it. I know the Contact Has Begun video got God knows how many, something like 25 million, like right away. So that was pretty crazy. But we also have that the eSETI.org. We have the four DVD set of Neil Kramer, Walking the Sacred Path. And this is a whole workshop, a whole weekend workshop. And there's over 10 hours of footage on these. And we also have George Kavassalis, The Journey Home, also filmed at eSETI Ranch. And that's another 10-hour documentary that's up. So if you go to eSETI.org, you can check all that out. And, you know, it's a great educational gift, and 10 hours of these amazing speakers is just mind boggling. But anyway, check that out. So now that I did my, promotion for the day, which I never do on this radio show, I never do any commercials. We're finally, letting people know about this. I'm getting a little feedback. All of a sudden we've got some craziness happening. Hello. Sounds like a giant G52 over the airwaves. There we go. I don't know what that was, but hopefully we're still on the air. But anyway, my next guest, I've got a great guest. It's somebody I've been following for a long time, and he's an intuitive, a healer. He does sacred journeys. It's got some pretty amazing information to share, and without any further ado, I want to bring Jerry Wills on the show. Jerry, are you with us?
Yes, hi. How are you?
Sounds like we have some ETs on the line here trying to get in or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's par for the course. Whenever I do one of my shows, I have weird things happening too.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because almost every show we get some craziness, and it depends on the guest, but We've had everything from one studio had actually had six lions, and all six of their lions went down, and we didn't finish the show. And they told me that was a record, you know, that they've had, you know, on the show. But you know, we get all kinds of crazy, you know, feedback. The lions work fine, and all of a sudden the sound just drops off, or the lions get all the static, or it sounds like ET's on the other end or something. But I'm sure you're having the same experiences.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are times when I test a system for 24 hours straight, and when I go live, nothing works. It's just maddening.
Yeah. I have a theory about that, but it's a multiple theory. I think, you know, powers that were, that used to be the powers that be, are playing around with their equipment. But also I've noticed, too, a lot of these little grays when they're around really mess up technology. So we're always clearing the energy and clearing these guys out, and then everything works again. It's kind of interesting.
Well, they don't show up around here very often because they know I'll eat them if they happen to come by.
Yeah, we usually take care of them pretty well. But, you know, every once in a while they'll kind of start playing around, and then we go, okay, we got to clear these guys out, and then everything works fine.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But boy, it's like I'm trying to think of where to start. I know you've told this story a million times, but maybe you can give just a little background of how you got started in this field, and a little bit about your I think you've had a pretty interesting lifetime, and actually from childhood on. I'd love to hear just a little bit about that.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, the way I got started in this field, it goes back all the way back to my first waking cogent memories. A lot of strange things have happened to me in my life, and you know, I thought it was pretty much par for the course until I got older and started comparing notes with friends of mine who either were fascinated by it or completely repulsed by it because it was just beyond the scope of their abilities to understand. You know, I think that the most interesting place to begin is probably when I was about 5 years old or so. I had a severe injury, and as a result of that, I was bedridden for I don't know how long, to tell you the truth, because I don't remember the details of that injury all that well, and probably a good thing. But in the middle of the night one night, there were these gray beings that showed up and came into the room where I was sleeping, and they were basically looking me over, wanting to find out if I was all right, which I thought was kind of strange, but I wasn't really afraid of them. They portrayed themselves as, first they portrayed themselves as midgets, and then later they appeared to me as they actually were, I guess after I got a little bit more used to them. From that point forward, not a lot happened until I was later in my teen years, and it was probably about 12 and a half years old, I found myself living in the hills of Kentucky. I had been in Denver when this previous incident had happened. And in Kentucky one night, there was this enormous UFO that just came. It came from, we lived on a hill, so it apparently came up over the hill, right above the tree lines, right over these high-tension power lines, and just sat to the left of these power lines, just sitting there glowing. Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of strange things started from that point forward in time. It became a commonplace thing to see lights in the woods. I ended up meeting some of these people who were on these craft, and they looked just like you and I. They had spent some time educating me about the different races that were here. And over the course of 5 years, I had quite an opportunity to visit with them and experience the extent of their technology, I suppose, as far as they were willing to show it to me. Past that point, They left when I was about 18 and proceeded to show up at that stage of things every 10 years. Mm-hmm. And they continued showing up every 10 years for a total of 3 visits. The last visit would have been when I was 48. They didn't show up. And that was when that's 9/11. Towers thing. And from that point forward, there hasn't been a lot of contact person to person, face to face. There have been some things that have taken place, but nothing as spectacular as what had happened before 2001. Mm-hmm. Parallel to all that, James, I also, because of my interactions with them, I became very, very interested in ancient civilizations. And I wanted to find these ancient places because they had told me that they'd had interaction with these cultures that now are perhaps lost to time. But the remains of these people were still to be found, and they gave me some ideas where to look. And so the past 20 years, I suppose, I've been on a bit of a personal quest just to try and find these places to satisfy my own curiosity. And that's how our other website, Expeditions TV, came about. It's because we decided to start documenting these journeys and put them out for everyone to see. And in a nutshell, that's pretty much how it all happened.
Have you seen, have you been watching some of Michael Tellinger's work?
Oh, yeah. Michael was a guest of mine about a year ago on one of my shows.
Yeah, I was fascinated. He just sent me a new YouTube video where he hiked up and found this foot. And the foot is at least 4 feet, maybe even 5 feet it's long. Perfect foot. I mean, has all the toe indentions, everything on it. And, whoever owned that foot had to be 30 feet tall.
Yeah, I've seen that video. And I support Michael in his work. He's quite a guy.
Yeah, he's a great, really good friend. He comes out to the ranch all the time and hangs out here. And he's like a kid in a candy store, watching all the light spheres here and the ships and all the other things going on.
Yeah, I bet. Well, the thing about the foot is incredibly interesting to me because of a couple of reasons. One is because the footprint is so large, and we spent about 3.5 years looking for giants and discovered that it was pretty much a hands-off subject.
Yeah.
The other reason is because we found footprints in South America. They don't match in stature at all what Michael is showing there. But, the fact that it's in granite really throws a lot of people because the process necessary for putting a footprint like that, even extruding from the toes and up, like if you were to drag your foot, mm-hmm. that whole process is unthinkable. How can you do that using today's thought process, with what we know? How is this done? And it becomes obvious that we don't know any way that can be done. But one of the things that we've run into in South America are that granite blocks have been very precisely cut, placed, so forth, and they've been created to such a high degree of accuracy that even by today's standards and with the equipment that's available, it'd be impossible to make these. One of the stories that we've heard in Peru in particular is that they had a plant there that when these plants were mixed together, the rock would become very, very soft and malleable. If this had been put on that stone and a giant had put his foot in there, I can see where that would be possible. But a lot of folks are discounting what Michael is showing the world because they can't wrap their mind around how it's done because it doesn't fit a paradigm that they're familiar with. And I think for everyone listening and for the supporters of Michael, of course I support him, I think it's important to realize if you don't think outside the box, you're not going to be able to find answers. Just because it seems impossible doesn't mean that it is.
Yeah, I think the real research, if you want to find out about giants, is just to go down to the Smithsonian and dig around in their basements where all the giant skeletons have been hijacked and taken to keep the old religious, story going.
Yeah, well, and one of the things that we found was a burial place for giants. It's up around the Mount Trumbull area. Mm-hmm. You can't get to where the giants are. You can't get to where they're buried. And strangely enough, if you were to even come across one of the burials and try to examine it, get even a shred of evidence, you are immediately in big trouble. And we know that because we located some places and we were warned off before we actually went and got the DNA samples that we were looking for. We had to just leave it alone. When we went back to the area, we were told that there had been a team that had come in. They don't know who these people had been. They had their suspicions. I mean, these are farmers, ranchers living back in the hills. Mm-hmm. But they had come in, sealed the place off, taken what they wanted, filled the hole back in, and that was that, and the remains were now gone. Mm. We knew where there had been some remains.
Uh-huh.
But we'd have been in very deep trouble had we tried to do anything to bring that information to the world with verifiable evidence.
You would think with, the biblical stories about, David and Goliath and things like that, that they would really want to bring this out and say, look, here's proof. There were giants on the land. This validates the biblical story. But for some reason, it fits right into there with UFOs and fuelless energy technology. You just don't talk about it.
Yeah, I know. It's a shame. It's almost, in the same frame of thought as UFOs or a lot of the things that we know exist, but we don't have absolute proof for. It's as though whoever our keepers are, if we get a little inkling of the true nature of our existence, it diminishes their ability to control us. And I think that's probably what's going on.
Yeah, that would definitely make sense. Because they want to keep the status quo going. They want to keep the original story going and kind of keep it within the religious structures and the old outdated archaeology and science that has been just blown out of the water. I know Cremo's work is amazing. I think he's got fully developed humans back to something was 620 million years ago. They're finding, advanced human skeletons, so that just really messes the story up.
Well, and this sandstone outcropping at Lake Titicaca, we were on our way there to document that. It had just been discovered. Mm-hmm. Bolivia had a very poor attitude towards U.S. citizens at the time. And so we would have been in deep trouble had we been caught, but we had done everything we could to get to this place. And at the last minute, of course, it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. But it is something that Michael Cremo and I have discussed. And this sandstone outcropping, basically, in Lake Titicaca, the southeastern part of the lake, has two human footprints on it. And they are estimated to be 1.2 billion years old.
Wow.
Incredibly, incredibly old.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a stride, it's a couple of steps.
Yeah. With a dinosaur probably following it. So I know they found those. They found, regular human footprints right alongside the dinosaur, so.
Yeah, that's in New Mexico. We've not gotten there personally, but we know where it's at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like, you know, when you put two and two together, just all of these findings again and again and again are really documenting a lot of the ancient myths and the supposedly myths, the ancient stories about how civilization has been around for a long, long time and had to start over as primitives again and again because of pole shifts or meteor impacts or misuse of technology. And it's in all the ancient scriptures, you know, the Vedic scriptures talks all about this.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, the earth is much different now than it was during those times. That just probably goes without saying, but a lot of folks don't consider how different 10,000 years makes on the way the surface and the lay of the land would be. But when you take it back 100,000 or a million years, then you've got vast, vast differences. Mm-hmm. A good example of that is something that is in Utah. I believe it's called Lake Bonneville. It's a dry lake now, but it was actually an inland ocean. And all around this inland ocean, there were, towns, cities. Mm-hmm. Something happened. The lake dried up. I don't know what the reasons were for this to have occurred, but these places became completely uninhabitable. But it was known that these places had been inhabited and that they contained great wealth. And one of the things that my wife Kathy uncovered in her research was that it was even known of in Europe prior to the Spaniards first coming to this part of the world. Mm-hmm. And they were looking for these, they thought they were cities of gold. They thought they were vast repositories of wealth. It wasn't until the 1800s that the concept began to emerge that these places might also have some very interesting weapon systems, mm-hmm. some methods where they defended themselves that were far beyond the understanding or abilities of anyone alive at that time. Mm-hmm. So there were searches that were conducted all through Utah, and it became one of the focal points for looking for lost civilizations. But the cover story basically was that they were just scouting the land. Mm-hmm. We uncovered the details of all that, and it was just an amazing story.
Have you heard about that installation, I believe? Valerie Uvaroff was talking about it, and I believe I might be incorrect. I think it's near Siberia somewhere, but it's this installation, and it's still operable, and it's a system that kicks on when some large object comes too close to the Earth, and it just fires off a shot and destroys, you know, whatever, some kind of a huge pulse beam or whatever. And they can't get near it. Anybody that goes near it ends up, you know, dropping dead, basically. And it's emitting some strange field of energy. They just are leaving it alone. They said it's there for a reason. I think they even put some gear on, some major radioactive gear, and that didn't work. It's a different field altogether.
You know something, I was talking to some Russian scientists, I don't remember how long ago it was now, it's been within the past couple of years. Actually, scientists, plural, is not proper, it's just one person. Mm-hmm. And this fellow gave me several documents, all written, of course, in Russian. Mm-hmm. The pictures were fun to look at. But his explanation basically coincides and parallels exactly what you're saying. And the Russians wanted to harness this, but no one could get close to it. And it's just a remarkable story. You're right. It's quite an intriguing thing. I would love to know more about that.
Yeah, he said that there was actually three more that they knew about, and one of them was here in the United States, and they're not going to talk about where it is or anything else, but, you know, it's somewhere like in the Badlands or wherever. It's out in the middle of nowhere. And it's the same thing effect has happened there. You just nobody will ever go near that area anyway because it's so remote. But you know, it's if you do go there, you suffer the same consequences. But wow. You know, I'm hoping that they just leave these things alone because they may have a reason for being there, and it might be saving grace, you know, for any major incoming meteors that might be getting a little too close.
Well, you know, based on what we've seen with how the establishment, as we'll call it, how they handle things of this nature, the first order of business after identifying that it's there is to take it apart and mm-hmm. see if it can be improved upon.
Yeah.
The knowledge and technology that was available to the builders obviously is not available to anyone of this age. And mm-hmm. to do something like that would just be completely irresponsible and foolish.
Well, that's pretty much the modus operandi of our government. I think even to try to shoot down these UFOs, you know, these beings have who knows? I mean, they may have come, you know, millions of light years from wherever, or who knows how many light years, if not from another dimension. And the technologies to do that are almost unthinkable. But, you know, they try to shoot them down and steal the technology so they can back engineer it for the war industry. And that, to me, there's just no, you know, you think about military intelligence, there's just no intelligence behind that at all. You know, firing on a civilization that's thousands, if not millions or billions of years ahead of you in technology and evolution.
Well, it isn't about intelligence. It's about the acquisition of power.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, true. But it's to me, it's just common sense that maybe you might want to befriend these people and get them on your side versus making enemies out of them. That would be a much, much better path to take.
Well, I completely agree with you, but I think that time probably has passed. Mm-hmm. From what I was told, there were opportunities early on in the, the mid-20th century, opportunities that were basically turned away from in light of other civilizations who would offer technology. Mm-hmm. Basically, the story I was told, James, is that they... we'll call them race one and race two. There, it represents mm-hmm. a conglomeration of races on either one of these fronts. Mm-hmm. But race one wanted to have peaceful, cooperative, and open dialogue with the people of this world. And race two comes in and says, we'll give you weapons and give you technology. In return, we want something from you. Race one didn't want to offer weapons. They wanted to offer technology. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't good enough.
Yeah. And, you know, it seems like the powers that be, just as then as they are now, are mainly focused on power over others, or the acquisition of money and power and wealth at any expense. And hopefully that's coming to the surface. I mean, it sure is being exposed on every front right now.
Yeah, I think it is. Unfortunately, I don't think there are enough people who are willing to stand up and have their voice heard in order for things to remain free so that we have a chance to go to the next stage of our experience with all of this. You know, mm-hmm. from what I've been able to tell, a lot of the things that we take for granted are being undermined as though it were built on sand that could be easily washed out from under us.
Yeah, we've seen that. I imagine you're talking about some of these, like the, was it the NDA or whatever that is, 1867, wherever that bill is.
Yeah.
That just blew me away when what is it? I'm on almost every one of our senators voted for that thing. And it's in direct opposition to the Constitution, you know, and I like what Naomi Wolf said. She said, she goes, basically they all signed their arrest warrants, but, you know, we'll see where that goes. But, I've just seen it. I guess they're trying to pass another one now. I'm not sure, but they have the internet one they're trying to pass where they can censor the internet. And then there's another one behind that. And somebody just brought it to my attention. I've been away, so I haven't been really looking into these things, but I guess they're passing an, oh, the next one is now is that they can take away your U.S. citizenship at any time and just kick you out of the country.
Well, you know, if they were to do that and they didn't kick you out of the country, then you probably would be better off.
Yeah, you can have mine the way things are going now.
Yeah, it's like, free health care and get government subsidies and free housing and...
Yeah, everything. But, it's pretty insane. It's just unbelievable where this is going. But, the way I see it is that it all has to come to a head, and it all has to just be in your face, and it has to be made personal. And then as soon as those three elements are there, then finally people will rise up and do something. But they won't do anything, and as long as they have their beer and their TV and their football games and their condo or whatever and a job, they're just going to keep going business as usual. But it seems like almost all those things have been taken away from them, and it's being made very personal.
And, well, it doesn't become personal, James, until it happens to the person.
Exactly. But I think it's happened to enough people, there's going to be a severe backlash. We will probably have our own Arab Spring here and a few other events, who knows. But, there's enough jobless, homeless people out there and people having their benefits taken from them. Even the military is getting squashed, as far as their benefits and everything. So I think it's right around the corner. I don't think it's too far away.
Well, I agree. It is right in alignment with a lot of things that I was told back in the late 60s, early 70s. So it isn't a huge surprise to me to mm-hmm. see these things occurring. The interesting thing about these folks that I was visiting with as a teenager, I guess, is 15 to 18, right in there. Anyway, the... curious thing to me, now that I reflect back on it, it's almost as though they had the capacity to move through time. The things that they told me and showed me, it was as though it were taken right off of a news feed from, the ages that we've been through since.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's most startling to me, and they told me, you have to remember this, and they showed me 3-4 times, don't forget this. This is important. All right, I won't forget it. There was a headline they showed me in a newspaper. It was very large type. I'd never seen a newspaper with type so large. And it said, the world goes to Riyadh. I didn't even know what Riyadh was, and I didn't have a chance to read the story. I just saw the newspaper on the screen. It says, mm-hmm. The world goes to Riyadh. Don't forget that. Well, this was, what was it? It was about 1991, 1992, when Desert Storm occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And here in Arizona, we have a newspaper called the Arizona Republic. And I don't know if it was like this in other newspapers. I suspect it might have been. But in the Arizona Republic, the largest type that you've ever seen, the headlines were, the world goes to Riyadh. And it just really sent a chill through me. Now, how is it that they can move through time? How is it that they have this information that they can show me back in, let's say it was about 1970, 1971, it's astonishing to me. Since then, I've had, a few opportunities to quiz them about this, and the answers I've been given are really kind of intriguing. Essentially, from what I've been told, and I certainly can't prove this, But I've been told that, yeah, they can move through time. And to go from where we are to wherever they come from happens really, as far as the observer goes, it happens in a very fast order, seconds. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, threw that out there. I thought your listeners might find that interesting. I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah, I've been always fascinated by that, the time travel capabilities and with the future itself, because what's really interesting is that when you look at the future, you know, everybody says, you know, it's some people say it's fixed. Some people say it's malleable. Some people actually say there is no future. There's only now. You know, you hear all these different theories about it. But, you know, what's amazing is that I think there are certain events, major events, that are pretty solid. They're pretty fixed. And you know, there's a lot of other events around that have to do with free will and choice, individual choice and collective choice. But it seems like they know where these major events are going to unfold and when. And I don't know. You know, I don't know how they do it other than just to go forward and look at the future, like set their little time clock and pop in and take a look at what's going on and then come back.
Well, from what I've been told, there is a region. A lot of folks would say some dimension or something, but I think that's an overused term. But let's call it a region. And let's say that we have, from everything, put your left and right hand parallel to each other. Everything to the left of your left hand is the past, and everything to the right of your right hand is the present on into the future. Mm-hmm. When they move from point to point, the left, far side of your left hand could be near their home world, and to the right side of your right hand could be here. This region is of a nondescript size, and it's a nondescript location. It exists because they punch a hole through the fabric of space. They go into this region. Once they're there, they can choose where to exit. And in choosing where to exit, it either is to this next location they're going to, or perhaps it's another point in time altogether. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the specific details of it, but this is kind of how it was explained to me.
Yeah, that totally makes sense about, you know, because we have these things. We watch these ships create their own little wormholes, and, you know, there's nothing there. And all of a sudden, this ship just kind of like creates this little, you know, you see this distortion, and all of a sudden, boing, it just pops out. And where there was nothing. So, and I know a lot of in the spiritual teachings I've undergone, a lot of people say that if you look at a timeline, you know, from the past and you have the present and the future, and there's this timeline going along, when you're in spirit, you can go back in that timeline or forward in that timeline, because there is no time when you get into the higher dimension. So it makes sense that these people probably even have the technology to do that, seeing that how advanced they are, you know, thousands or millions of years ahead of us, who knows? I mean, there's all these different groups out there. It seems like that would be very easy just to raise their frequency up and become more of an energy or a spirit form, and then just pop in anywhere along that timeline they wish.
Well, I don't know that it's really raising their frequency, but it certainly is changing the changing something in the signature of all the way down to their atomic structure. Mm-hmm. It's they showed me, but I don't even know how to begin to explain that.
yeah. We have footage of the ships here actually bilocating into not just one ship, but into as many as four, and then back to one again. And I, you know, to me, that just baffles me, because I started thinking about, okay, So if I was on that ship, there would be four me's all at once.
Yeah.
You know? And I thought about, okay, so they could jump forward in time and then jump back, and then jump forward and jump back, jump forward and jump back, and make it appear as though there are four ships, and there would be four ships there, but they're all existing in different times. And then, I just to wrap your head around that, all these other questions open up. Well, you know, which one is going to be the real you? And they would all be the real you, and it would be just as real as any other you. And it just really messes. You know, you keep going with it, and pretty soon you have an identity crisis, and then you become enlightened after that, basically. But soon as you lose your identity.
Yeah, it certainly can be quite a teaser intellectually, and that's probably why no one really has explained this with enough clarity to where anyone can wrap their mind around the details.
I just don't think we have the reference points, especially in our intellect, you know, the mind here. We just don't have the reference points to wrap our heads around these things. But, you know, you think about it, there are lamas and yogis, and I've studied with some that actually vanish. You can see Tonkas right through them, you know, before they disappear. And they've been known to bilocate and bring things back and do all kinds of crazy things. And so if you think if there's people here on the planet that can do that now, what would happen if you had a whole race of beings that could do that? And what would happen if their technology rose as the same as their spirituality or was on the same level?
Well, and take it a step further, James, they being very intelligent, obviously, mm-hmm. if they could develop a language to explain and show how this works, mm-hmm. then more and more people would have access to the language and be able to understand it, and more people would be doing it.
Yeah, you'd have to develop a whole new physics and to bring that out. And you know, I think about going back to Jesus. He had two teachings. You know, he had one for the inside group that he talked to, and then he had one for the masses where, you know, he had to talk in parables or things that they would understand. And I think that's the same thing happening here on the earth with people who are being contacted or have had near-death experiences or things like that. It's like they're just operating from a whole different language, you might say.
Yeah, it is. But I think human potential is infinite. And mm-hmm. if we had access to the knowledge, we would have access to the abilities.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. We've had some incredible masters come through the ranch here. And one in particular is bilocating spontaneously, but he doesn't know how to control it. And it's kind of hilarious, the stories that, and this guy's high, really high integrity level, and he's demonstrated a lot of this, you know, to us personally, so we know he has these abilities, but we've actually photographed him, you know, disappearing and reappearing. But he'll just pop up in China, you know, buried under the snow, and then have to dig his way out and find, you know, one of the local monasteries or something. And same thing happened to Bed. He showed up there. And the first time he did it, he didn't have his wallet with him or anything. And he had to go to a monastery that knew who he was and then pull some strings, you know, just so he could get back home. But it's kind of funny. He says he's really working on controlling it. But he said the mindset you have to get into to do it, it's very hard to recreate to get back.
Yeah, and you know, people listening to this, James, are probably scratching their head and thinking, how on earth, I mean, is this real? And let me tell you something. I had a friend, his name was Dr. Safwat El Amin. He's deceased mm-hmm. now. Safwat was a friend for a short amount of time, far too short. But this is a fellow who can do exactly what you're talking about. You know the movie Jumpers? You've probably heard of that.
Yes, I did. I actually saw that movie.
Well, that movie was produced by a fellow who was among a group of rather influential and wealthy people who paid him a great deal of money to illustrate jumping. Mm-hmm. And they paid him, and he jumped, and he ended up jumping into Cairo, and he promptly got hit by a car and had to fly home to collect his money. Mm-hmm. But Safwat could levitate in the air. He could look at something and make it bend, I mean metal, and make metal just bend. He was best known for his healing abilities. He would use a raw egg, run it over a person's body, and start chanting, pulling nastiness out of a person, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And, Safwat was incredible. So for your listeners who are going, how can this be? For what it's worth, I've seen this as well, and it is real. It's not just a big story, and it's just absolutely mind-boggling when you experience it for yourself, because you are left, as we were saying before, you're left without a language to explain exactly what the heck just happened.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you watch these Qigong masters where they actually dissolve tumors, you know, with the ultrasound, you know, live. You can watch this tumor just disappear, you know, on film, and it's very well documented. So, you know, if they can do things like that, I mean, it shows very clearly complete mind over matter, or the ability to totally disintegrate things or
reorganize matter.
Yeah, totally reorganize it you know, it's just amazing. So, you know, I always think about it. If you take all of the things today, you know, that we know of that have been pretty well documented about people bilocating, levitating, becoming totally transparent, you can see right through them. You know, all of these things that masters are doing today, and I always say take a whole civilization that might have evolved to that level, along with their technology. It's just amazing. You know, these are probably the folks that are visiting us.
Yeah, I would have to agree completely with you on that point. And, you know, the sad thing is, at least it's sad to me, it's that I think that you and I and everyone listening, we have this within our grasp. It's something that is part of our heritage. I don't think that humankind, what we are here on the face of the earth, I don't think it evolved here. It came here from elsewhere. And because of that, the same properties that the visitors have illustrated to us that they have, we also have these same properties. And who knows, we might have something even beyond what some of these have.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause we are such a mixture of genetics here.
Yeah, exactly. But the sad thing is that we are so distracted, and we've been so indoctrinated, and we've been put into a place where we will not be allowed to go to the point where we might realize the true nature of our existence in a life form.
Mm-hmm.
And I would really like to see that next step in our personal evolution to occur. I think it's possible.
Oh, I do too. I mean, that's my whole purpose behind this ranch, is creating the eCity Ranch here, is to, I have, you know, physicists with like 9 degrees and things like that, that have phenomenal technologies that are ready to come out. We tried to bring them out earlier, and a couple people got killed, actually, and it was a real mess. So I think we're getting close to where these can come out, but there's also spiritual technologies as well, and master teachers who have come here in the past who want to continue to teach and demonstrate this to other people. And that's always been my dream, is to create this, you know, ultimate healing center using the best of technology, always earth-friendly healing technology, and also, you know, have the spiritual practices as well that allow people to, you know, develop to their highest potential.
Well, I applaud you on your efforts on that. I've been following you for quite some time. As a matter of fact, you and I spoke a long time ago, and you were trying to acquire the ranch. And I've been a fan and supporter, although I've not been out there waving flags. But anyone that I've spoken with, they know that I support you and what you're doing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. When did we – I remember, you know, when I saw you talk, I saw Alfred Weber interviewing you.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept going, I know I've talked to you before, and I always remember faces, but I couldn't bring it back. I think it was at some major conference or something.
No, what it was, James, is at least to my recollection, which could be flawed, Kathy and I were living in Peru.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, when did you acquire the ranch? What year?
25 years ago, so that would be 86, I think.
Okay.
85, 86, somewhere around there.
Okay. So you and I probably have crossed paths at some of these events.
Uh-huh.
But the time that I'm thinking, the time that I'm thinking of in mm-hmm. particular that really stands out in my memory was when I reached out to you. We had a conversation. We were living in Peru, and I was talking to you on a jury-rigged communications satellite system.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, there had been a UFO sighting or something, and it was significant down there. And I was trying to connect in with you and talk to you about it, and we had a brief discussion. You were certainly a gentleman and very friendly and warm, and it allowed us to continue our research and go forward with it.
Oh, great. Yeah. I hope I behave myself. Every once in a while I get a little a little ornery.
yeah,
I try
too.
Not to be. You know, I try to listen to everybody's story because, I mean, my story is as about as crazy as they get. I know your story is as well. So,
yeah.
You know, if I expect people to listen to my story, maybe I, you know, be a good idea to listen to other people's story.
I agree. I know just how
yeah.
it is.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes some of these stories you go, well, you know, all I can say is that's I haven't experienced that. And that's your experience and that's your reality. And who am I to take it away from you, you know, so.
Yep.
But, yeah, it gets really crazy, especially in the field of ufology. I'm sure you followed that. But, I mean, we hear every story from they're going to come down and beam everybody up, you know, max out your credit cards, nothing to worry about. And, you know, to they're here to eat us, you know, and turn us into human pilaf. And you know, being in this field for a while, I've heard almost every story, you know, possible. You know, some of them, there may be some groups that are going to beam some people up, and there may be some groups that would that find humans very tasty. Who knows? You know, but
well, I had an experience with when we were going down to Peru. This is back in the 90s. I had made friends with a fellow that told me his name is Rich. Mm-hmm. It wasn't his real name, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. He proceeded to tell me that he was from the Pleiades.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was at the same period of time the Barbara Marciniak's book, Bringers of the Dawn, had just become popular, and everybody was channeling someone from the Pleiades.
Uh-huh.
And it was the vogue thing to do. So here's this fellow telling me that he's from the Pleiades. So I smiled politely and I said, well, of course. And he says, you don't believe me. And I said, I've read Barbara Marciniak's book, at least as much of it as I could read, before being bored by it. And I decided that, you know, it wasn't for me. I know some people like it. And he says, well, we're familiar with that book as well. And he proceeded to give me some details that he of his feelings about it. Well, the point of this story is that later he showed me without any question that he definitely walks off of a flying saucer. And if he says he's from the Pleiades, who am I to question it?
Yeah.
You know? Uh-huh. And then I proceeded to meet several others of his kind. And we actually became pretty good friends between me and, what was it, three others. The other 10 or so, I really didn't have any interaction with. I spoke to them, but it wasn't like we were friends. Rich and I were better friends, for example, than Cara Maya or the Crazy Chinaman. Mm-hmm. They were friends, but not real close friends like Rich and I had become. He would show himself to the people that I was traveling with, because I was taking groups to Peru. And he would bring the ships in and just have them hover over Machu Picchu. He'd have them fly around the mountains, and he thought it was great. Well,
yeah.
The aspect of having people take off and being rescued by the ETs and all the stories that you and I both have heard, Rich warned me one afternoon while we were sitting on the side of a mountain. He said that you're going to hear about a major UFO sighting in, what was it, I think Brazil. UFOs showing up over the top of a mountain, and people are standing up on the mountain waiting for it to happen. He says the next thing that's going to take place is they are going to offer that some of these folks can come with them. And then that's going to go on for a while. And then they won't come back. Well, sure enough, I did hear about this story. And the way that I heard about it was from my friend Jim Hertak, who wrote The Keys of Enoch.
Mm-hmm.
He was going down to investigate it. So I told Jim what I'd been told. And apparently, Jim went down and checked it out, from what I understand, but he was not very willing to take a ride with these folks, because I was told if you go with them, you'll never be heard from again. They're not the mm-hmm. people that you want to be affiliated or associate with.
Yeah. Human pilaf, huh?
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. That was one of the other questions. It's funny. I was going to ask. I know Hertak found another foot. I guess was that in South America? That was almost the same size. I mean, it was another 4 foot, almost 5 foot. I don't know how big it was, but a giant footprint as well. Are you there? Looks like we might have lost. Hello. Hello.
I'm here, James.
Okay, yeah, we lost you there for just a second.
Yeah, don't know what happened.
Yeah, so we just have to go back to the story we were talking about and figure out why somebody was upset about that going over the air. But I know JJ really well. I've had him on the show a couple of times, and we've done a lot of work together, and he's quite an interesting guy. He found another footprint. I guess I don't know if you heard me or not, but it was another 4 or 5 foot long footprint of a giant, and I can't remember exactly. I think it was in South America, wasn't it?
Well, you know, I've not heard about this one, so I'm hearing about this for the first time. If you have information, please send it to me. We'll certainly investigate it.
Yeah, he found another one that's just massive, and that was the same thing. I looked at that one, I said, well, I go, judging by the size of that footprint, doing the math, I said, that whoever owned that footprint either had extremely large feet or was 30 feet tall, you know, and he said, that's what we figured. He said they figured over 30 feet,
yeah.
Which I thought was amazing.
Yeah, so, well, and We've heard all kinds of reports about giants that tall. In southwestern Ecuador, there is a small village there. I think it's called Santa Maria. And right near this place, which is in a very desolate area, it's basically a small fishing village at this point. Mm-hmm. But in the nearby area, there is a legend that there were these 30-foot-tall, hairy giants, all men, and they showed up there, and that's where they decided to live. And they dug this incredible well that's still there to this day. Anyway, the story goes that they had done such atrocious things to the people around that the gods one day showed up and destroyed them.
Mm-hmm.
And we've not made our way up to Santa Maria at this point. Going through that that border crossing between Peru and Ecuador that we would have to go through to get to this particular place, we're told it's really, really nasty, very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
We've been through a few dangerous checkpoints before, but this one apparently doesn't even compare to the others. So we haven't done it. You know, we travel with $10,000, $15,000 worth of video gear.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not insured. So if it goes, it's gone.
Yeah.
So we're little sketchy on going through there right now.
You know, it's funny, like just being down in Mexico, it's getting a little crazy down there, but basically if you keep your nose clean, you're fine, you know, but there's a lot of cartel stuff going on and some battles between the drug cartels and the government and trying to, over who controls what, you know, so.
Where were you?
I was down in a little village called Sayulita.
Oh, okay.
And it's up just from Puerto Vallarta, and you go through the jungle and just down the coast a bit, and did a few treks out there. And there's some pretty interesting, there's Alta Vista, where they have all this rock art, you know, and some of them look just like UFOs. I mean, the rock art does, and all kinds of craziness there. And they had... I can't remember the word. They had actually a UFO crash there, and all the local people saw it. They took pictures of them loading it up on a flatbed and taking it off, and those were circulating all around. And my brother's down there quite a bit, and he went and talked to the people, and they're really open about it. They said, "Oh yeah, it showed them where it crashed, told them where it crashed, and said yeah, they came in with a flatbed and threw it on it and hauled it right on out of there."
Wow.
Yeah, so there's a lot of activity in the bay just to the left of Sayulita. If you go right around the corner, there's a big bay out there. And the fishermen have all kinds of stories of the ships actually coming up out of the water there and glowing lights, you know, moving around underneath them. And there's actually paintings of these beings down there that are, the guys are blue. You know, and there's one painting done by this shaman. He did this painting of these blue beings that were standing behind the the rulers of the day, the king of the day, and the blue being is standing behind him, blessing him, and the wife of the king is sitting there with a little blue baby.
Wow.
You know, it shows a little hybrid activity there, you know, as well, or some manipulation. So it's kind of interesting, a really interesting place.
Do they have any of the cone heads, the elongated skulls down there? I don't recall.
No, there's, I guess Peru's got a lot. I just interviewed, God, mental block, I'll have to think of his name, but...
Brian Forrester?
Yeah, Brian. Yeah, I just interviewed him and talked to him about the cone heads. And I guess they finally got a really good DNA sample to Lloyd Pye, and they're going to do the DNA on it and check it out and see what they come up with. But I'm not sure when they're going to have this finished. I think they're going to release it probably pretty soon. I know this year, I think they're going to release the findings of that.
Yeah, I was discussing all this with Brian. Oh, gosh, it's been well over a year ago now. We were down in Ica City. There's a museum there. And Ica is probably, let's see, it's north of the Nazca Desert. It's actually north of a couple different deserts, but Nazca being the one folks would latch on to intellectually. Mm-hmm. In this particular museum in the basement, one of our assistants who had been hired while we were there doing a video called Secrets of the Sand, and this fellow, I've forgotten his name now, but he's on our video. But anyway, he took us into the basement and showed us a mummy of a woman who had been pregnant when she died, and the fetus has a cone head. It hasn't been born yet. It's still within its womb, mummified at this point, but it too had a cone head, just like the woman. Fascinating stuff, and I applaud Brian on his efforts to bring this information forward. He's doing a very good job.
The woman, do you know the height of her? Or
she wasn't that tall.
Uh-huh. She had a cone head, huh?
Yeah, she had a cone head. But without seeing the skull and examining it, it'd be impossible to determine if she was actually a different race. There were cone heads there we were allowed to examine. And we have it on our video at expeditionstv.com at Secrets of the Sand, where you can see the differences in the bone structure between human and not human.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating stuff. You know, to actually hold and see and deal with this stuff on a personal level, it is just amazing. I love it.
I can imagine just holding a skull like that and just sensing the frequencies and, tuning in. I'm sure it's still holding some pretty incredible vibes. what would come of that?
Well, exactly. And there's no way to validate it unless you get some tangible information that you could cross-reference with. I pick things up off of the things that I hold. You know, I do this thing that we were talking about earlier about
psychometry.
It isn't psychometry. It's healing. Put my hands on a person. I see inside of them, and I change things. Like you were saying before, tumors going away and so on. Mm-hmm. I have thousands of cases like that where I've done this. It's been very well documented. Well, when I hold some of these truly remarkable artifacts, whether artifacts or skulls or parts of skeleton, then I can see what this was, where it was, mm-hmm. and the details behind it. And some of the stories are truly extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Be nice if I could validate it.
Yeah. Were they attached to some really high technology by any chance, or?
Well, the stories that I got off of them basically split into two prongs. One is for some of those that had their heads wrapped, they were trying to emulate the gods.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to be the children. They're trying to make it look like, oh, this is a child of the gods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a prodigy of the gods. And as such, they would have a different social status in their life. Some of them truly were children of the gods. Mm-hmm. And there are those that actually were the gods themselves. You can see the differences, very distinct differences, in the bone structure between those who are the offspring of the gods, married or having children, let's not say married because it wasn't mm-hmm. such a thing then, but offspring of the gods, or if it was truly the people who had come here. And what we found is that these folks traveled here just like folks are traveling here now from different worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty obvious. I just, you know, with all this ancient alien stuff on the History Channel and I think the masses are pretty educated now that, basically the story we've been told over the years is incorrect and a very limited story. And I think they're getting close to being ready for, hey, guess what? Maybe they never left, maybe they're still here in massive underground installations and maybe they're still coming and going.
James, they're not only living underground. I know of a village in the mountains in Peru where they're mm-hmm. living their lives walking the streets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got to get over there. I haven't been to Peru yet. I've had a lot of opportunities, and I just was offered a tour to go there with a group, and I'm really thinking about doing it. Although lately I've been having a little not so good a feeling about traveling. Just this trip to Mexico, I got groped and you name it. I always opt out on those machines, you know. I don't want my DNA scattered. I just got a bad feeling about them. And just going through all that nonsense you have to go through and the TSA stuff, and it's quite an ordeal.
Well, if you ever want to go I don't know. I mean, we could work together as well if you want to put together a trip. We have been going for, gosh, 25 years, and, well, we know places that most people don't know.
Yeah.
And we like going places that most folks don't go to, although that isn't exactly the touristy route that most tours will give you. But
mm-hmm.
Anyway, at least we could tell you some places to go to if you want to go on your own. And I can certainly hook you up with people that we know we can trust.
Oh, that'd be great. I've got a question. I don't know if you've looked. I had some pretty crazy stuff happen right before I went to Mexico, and I didn't get there, unfortunately. But I had this dream, just clear as a bell. And I was talking to these beings, and the beings were not really of this world. They had a very high frequency to them, almost like a golden light around them, and beautiful beings. And in the dream, it showed the land just open up, and these beings were down there hanging out, a bunch of them. And then I hear Palenque, really loud in the dream.
I've been to Palenque.
Yeah, and I didn't get there. I really want to get over there, but there's something going on there. I mean, that was such a clear vision. There's definitely something going on there. What they showed me was underground. It wasn't right at the pyramid. It was off a little bit of ways from it. But I don't know if this might be happening on a whole different dimension. But I thought that was quite interesting, and I figured you've been there, and I'm curious about you, what you sensed around the area.
Well, it's interesting you had this vision. First off, I have been there and spent a few days, not really enough time. And this was during the period when you could actually go into the Temple of Inscriptions. And we got down inside and really got a good look at Pascal's tomb and how this place is made. It's just truly an extraordinary place. The reason that I went is because Karamaya, going back to an earlier part of our conversation,
mm-hmm.
Karamaya, this Pleiadian gal, told me that I needed to go to two places in Mexico. The one place I didn't make it to. The other place was Palenque.
Mm-hmm.
She said that there were people who lived in the ground, that lived underground, actually not in the ground, but they lived underground.
Yeah, underground.
And it was a spiritual center. And that these people lived on many worlds, and they travel between worlds as easily as we travel between rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that I should go there and meet them. Well, there were so many mosquitoes, being out at night made it, virtually impossible to be out there and I have a tendency to slap myself everywhere when there's mosquitoes all over me, and
yeah.
I assure you, I am a bologna sandwich for mosquitoes. So it wasn't very pleasant. But that's interesting that you had a vision like that, because it is validation for me and for what she had to say. The other place that I was told to go, and I've yet to go there, I don't know exactly how to explain where this is, except it's outside of Mexico City. It's beyond the Temple of the Sun and Moon. It's out in the desert towards the volcano, and mm-hmm. apparently there's an area there that's like a no man's land that people don't go to. And she said if I would go out there, that there was a group of geologists who were out there from the Pleiades that would, you know, that would make themselves known to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, this was, when was the Phoenix Lights? That was what, March 18th or something, back in,
yeah, I think it was
in the 90s, late 90s.
Lynn something. I'm trying to remember her name that did the whole documentary on that.
Was it Kitai? Is that it?
I think so. Something like that.
Well, the interesting, to me anyway, the interesting sidebar to that story is Rich said, you know, these geologists are doing a geological survey. They're here in Peru now, and they're working themselves up past where you live, past Phoenix, and they're going to be continuing a little past that. Then they're going to make their way back down, and they're going to be heading back down towards Mexico, towards the volcano in Mexico. I think it's Popocatépetl.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, if they're here, can I meet them? Can I see them? He says, well, I can tell you where they're going to fly past if you want to go take a look. So that night, and I was in the, I was in Cusco, and this huge, huge ship flew over in the distance. I didn't see, you know, like under it. It wasn't that kind mm-hmm. of a sighting. It was in the distance. At first, it just looked like a bunch of lights in a line. And when it turned, it looked like a flattened out V.
Mm-hmm.
And it, apparently Rich had told them if I was out there with him that he says, you know, you'll see it. Well, I was up on the side of a mountain when this is happening. It's cold as a dickens. And this thing turned and the lights just came on bright for a moment and then they dimmed back down and then it turned again. So it was just a line of lights, continued on and lost into the mountains. So I was fascinated. I thought this was really great, and Rich seemed to be really genuinely happy that I was jazzed about it. He says, well, you know, they're going to be up in your part of the world. So I said, well, how do I, you know, what's up with the lights? Well, you know, tell me all the details you can. So he proceeded to tell me some things. Well, sure enough, when the Phoenix Lights incident occurred, I was in Village Labs with Jim Delatoso and Susan Gordon. Mm-hmm. We were rehearsing that night, and I forgot who it was. It was at the editing bays in the front of the studios that was working on a video that he was doing. Anyway, the Phoenix Lights occurred. And I eventually, like everyone else, got to see some of the videos that were shot, and it was the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the questions that was going around is, well, you know, the light. You know, how do you know these aren't flares? So my suggestion was, from what Rich had told me, he said, well, those lights are very specific. They're on a specific wavelength. They're modulated. And it acts in part as a way to identify the ship, and it allows for others in the area who might be nearby to know who this is. So I passed that information on. I don't know that anything was made of it because most of the footage that was taken was taken with either film or mostly with video. And with video, you're not going to get the frequency that's embedded in the light. But one thing that might be interesting for you, James, is if you were to hook up and if have a friend who's an engineer using maybe a photo transistor or the likes to connect that to binoculars using a beam splitter and pull the light off of the craft that you're looking at and record what's coming off of that light. You're going to have some atmospheric aberration, but there should be something that's embedded in that light. Rich told me that on all ships, on all these UFOs that you might see, that it's always there. And I've never done anything with this information until right now, so I'm passing it on to you. Maybe it would be useful.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out. We've got, it's funny, just before I came in for the show, I just got back today, and I walked out this evening right at dark. It got dark, and I saw two small ships go by, and then one came right overhead, and it totally flared out three times, three nice big flares, kind of like a little welcome home. You know, I thought that was nice.
But yeah, that's great.
I have footage of these things coming treetop level right over our heads and powering up. We call it powering up. Mm-hmm. And they just become massive, and there's an energy that comes off these ships. I've actually filmed it where it looks like just the ship itself is getting really huge and massive, but you can actually follow the energy all the way to the ground, to the people on the ground. Wow. who are getting a some kind of a transmission, and people get real giddy and happy, you know, and feel, you know, their hearts open up, and they just feel all blissed out after these events, and they're doing something, you know, there's some kind of a transfer of energy, of consciousness and energy or whatever when they do these power-ups.
You know, that's a real interesting point, James. The use of light as a means of sending information. Mm-hmm. I have wondered about that for quite some time. You know, in Peru, there's a place there, there's a lake that the UFOs are seen coming in and out of. It's not Lake Titicaca. It's just outside of Cusco. And at the time, when all these contacts were happening for me down there, one of the favorite things for the folks who traveled with me was to go to this lake. It's called Lake Waipo, W-E-I-P-O, I think. And sure enough, there would be first one and then half a dozen floating, very intense, unidentified objects, either coming out of the lake or above the lake or up in the air or in the mountains all surrounding us. Mm-hmm. And they would move, and you'd go back the next day and take a look at where these lights were, and it was like, there are no roads. It's impossible for any light to be there, and it certainly wasn't a flashlight or a flare. These were like magnesium burning. It was so intense.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
One night when we were there, which is towards the end of our trip, I decided I was going to just run down to the lake. And it's just pitch black. And this is across a rather flat field. Recently, the ground had been broken, but it was mostly flat. And I decided we're going to run down there. Anybody that wants to come with me is welcome to, but I'm going to go and get as close to this as I can get. So we took off. And, of course, when you're at above 13,000 feet, you don't run very far.
Yeah.
So now we're nursing our lungs, still going forward, still trying to get there, tripping and falling occasionally. Mm-hmm. We get to within, let's say, 1,000 feet of this light, and it actually, we stopped and it moved towards us. Then it did something very strange. It was like the light just got really bright and it was pulsing. Almost like a flashlight through rapid moving fan blades. It was pulsing like this. So white, so bright. And then, poof, it was gone. Well, good thing we had a couple of flashlights. We had to make our way back quite a ways to the waiting bus. And we felt changed, but we couldn't explain what that was, how it manifested. We just felt different. We made our way back to Cusco, got a good night's sleep. The next day we caught our flight, went back to Lima, and did the Lima experience, and we're getting into the elevator first thing in the morning on our way to our flight home, and there are the three people, there was like seven or eight people that was in this group that went down there, but this particular moment in the morning, three of us out of about 25, we were walking to the elevator on the third floor. The elevator door opens. We all look at each other, and we're just frozen there. And it's like, what's wrong with us? We just can't move. The door closes. A few seconds later, kablam. The elevator crashed down three floors.
Wow.
And the first floor is not considered the first floor. It's considered the lobby. The first floor is the floor above it. So it went down four floors and completely crashed. I had an opportunity a few weeks later when we were back in Peru to ask Rich about this. And he said, I'm glad you didn't jump in that elevator, before I had a chance to say anything to him at all. And I said, how did you know about this? He says, well, we have our ways. And he laughs. He's kind of a wise guy. He had a really strange, quirky sense of humor. And I said, I was standing there. I would have gotten on it. And the other two people that were with me, and we just stood there staring at the door that was open, and we just didn't move, and it closed, and then it crashed. He says, do you remember when you were at WIPO? When you saw us at WIPO? I said, was that you? He says, no, it wasn't me, but it was so-and-so. I said, well, yeah, I remember that. It was incredible. The light just started flat. It got bright, and then it pulsed at us, and then, boom, it was gone. He says, do you know what happened? It was biblical. And I said, no, I don't really know what happened. I said, it was really quite a mystery, but we all felt pretty good afterwards. And he said, do you remember in your Bible about this guy was going down the road and there was this flash of light and suddenly he had literally seen the light, and he changed his life, and it changed the course of his history. And he told me the person. I can't remember the name of this person now. It seems like it was a tax collector or something.
Yeah.
And I said,
I think it was Paul, wasn't it?
I don't know. It's been so long.
I know Paul had one of those experiences with a big light flashing and changed his ways.
Or maybe that's who it was.
Yeah.
He says, that's what happened to you. I said, well, how does that work? Because he knows I'm an electronics engineer. I'm curious, how do these things work? And he said, it's real simple. We put information in the light. We broadcast it to you. It goes into your mind, and you have the information. What you do with it is what you do with it. He said, but in this particular case, we put it in there with enough force so that you wouldn't get on that elevator. We did it this way because we wanted you to understand this is one of the ways that we communicate with you. It's a non-invasive way. You always have the opportunity to not look.
That, you know, that makes total sense, because that's basically what's been happening here. It's odd that you're mentioning Jim De La Tosa, because I gave him some footage of a ship hovering over Portland State University. And with this footage was a light, and it was flashing really fast, and they would stop, and they would flash real slow, and they would flash really fast. And then along with the flashing, there was a tone that was coming, and it sounded like a cat purring, basically, in space. It was really amazing and very deep tone. It was just kind of going, whoa, whoa, I can't do it, you know, but very deep. And then when the light flashed faster, it would go, whoa, 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 like this. And then, and so he separated it out of the footage and got the tone and gave me a copy of it. And what's really interesting, he said that they haven't been able to figure this out, but he said there's some kind of a binary code in that sound. They don't know what it is yet, but he, you know, they were working on it, trying to figure it out. And this was back in the early 90s, I think, when I gave him this. And I thought it was interesting. And I was in meditation, and I was talking to him in meditation, and I asked him who they were and what they were doing. And I said, what are you doing over Portland State University at 2 o'clock in the morning? And they said, higher learning. So, you know.
It sounds like an answer you've gotten from Rich.
Yeah, yeah. And they said that it was light and sound transference, and he said that they were preparing the kids there at the university for contact in the future, that they were downloading them, and so when things do happen, they go, oh yeah, you know, that's, yeah, yeah, I knew this was going to happen, or they're preparing them ahead of time and you know, giving them a lot of information so that they're going to be using in the future.
Well, that's fascinating. You know, so to reiterate, I think it might be worth doing to hook up a system where you can capture the data from the light itself, not from a camera, but instead directly from binoculars or telescope, something, and record the data at that point. I think you might find something there.
I know there's people that have created these light beam communicators. I mean, I don't know how well they work, but they're working on that same principle where they would try to communicate to the ships through a light beam. And I thought that was kind of fascinating. I haven't seen the device, but it might be the way to do it. I think it's hilarious that they're trying to pick up radio signals from a ship, SETI, when the ships can fly faster than the radio signals. It would be useless. You'd have to park for a while and wait for your signal to catch up, you know. But, you know, some of those things they do over there don't make any sense whatsoever. But
I think it's maybe more than anything else, either uninformed people trying experiments to validate an experience, or it's certainly smoke and mirrors just so the rest of us will think they're trying to do something worthwhile.
Yeah. I think the second one is definitely at play because, you know, that's what I was on Coast to Coast once, and he was saying, boy, I wish I could get Seth Shustek out there, but there is no way that would ever happen. Even if we tied him and threw him in a car, he'd probably escape, you know, but he's been a really interesting character. I saw some footage once of a UFO flying back and forth over their huge antenna array, and I've been trying to get a hold of that footage. This friend of mine showed it to me, and it was just hilarious. And I said, oh, they would, you know, got these massive billion-dollar antennas out there trying to find a radio wave of a UFO when they're flying right over back and forth over their antennas.
Yeah, oh, that I'd like to see that one as well. That sounds great.
Yeah, I'm going to try to. It was on YouTube and it disappeared, and I found it again, and I should have embedded it or something, or snagged it, but I didn't know how to do it at the time. I think I'll bet I can track it down again and find it.
Well, if you do, I'd certainly enjoy seeing something like that.
Yeah, I'll send you a copy. Any of the listeners, if you can find that, it was on YouTube, and I guess. I don't know what the buzzwords would be, like SETI, UFO over SETI, or UFO over antenna installation. I don't know how you could pull it up, but or just type in UFO over the area where those installations are. I'm not sure where is the major setup they use.
Well, as I understand it, it's the Arecibo antenna they're using, isn't it?
Yeah, I know they're using that one, but they actually put a whole bunch of ones out in the desert, I think in Nevada or something. They had some antennas out there they were using.
Well, I know the very large array in New Mexico, maybe they were – that's used for radio astronomy, so it probably isn't
that.
That's
probably the one. Yeah, that would be the one.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a very impressive facility if you ever have a chance to see it, or any of your listeners.
Check that out.
It's in this bowl-shaped, naturally occurring valley, and it's just a whole slew of these huge dishes. It's been the backdrop for a few science fiction movies because it's just so impressive.
Yeah, I'll bet. You know, up on Mount Adams here, I'm not going to say where, but there's this area you can hike up to, and it's on the Native American land, so you have to get permission, and they very seldom will they let you go up there. But there's a special area you can go into, and you won't see another footprint there. Nobody goes there. Even they stay away from it. You know, they talk about this area as the fairy lights. You know, they go, no, we don't go there. We stay out of that area.
Wow, and, cool.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. But if you go up higher and then way up there, you'll find this little bowl, and it almost looks like this giant natural antenna. It's just the perfect bowl in the side of the mountain. And I took some friends up there with me, a couple people, and one of the guys slept for 3 days straight when we came back. He couldn't adjust to the energies and he couldn't stay awake. It was amazing. And same thing with both of them. It took them about 3 days to adjust, you know, after coming back to the energies there. And I've always wondered if there isn't some kind of a earth technology going on. They're definitely based in the mountain. There's an underground facility there with some very advanced beings. But, you know, I've always wondered about that bowl. Why is it when you go into that bowl, I mean, your hands tingle, you know, you feel energy coming out the end of your fingers, you feel your toes, everything. It's just amazing.
Well, that sounds interesting. How large of a circumference or how big a diameter is this thing?
I would say about just under a half a mile round.
A half a mile round?
Yeah.
And it's rock?
No, it's just this little indentation, this perfectly dish-shaped. It's almost like a meteor hit it, you know?
Wow.
This one little area, it's just a perfect, like an imprint, and it's just this little valley, like a perfect little indentation valley, and you go up in there, and there's all these trees snapped off at the top. You know, Bigfoot's up there, likes to do that. But, and you see things running around up there that are moving so fast, they're like a blur. You know, we saw these things running back and forth across the top of the rocks, and they were blurry. They were moving so fast. I have no idea what they were. They never slowed down fast enough for us to really get a good look at what they were. But, you know, who knows? You know, I don't know.
Well, that just sounds fascinating. We've had a lot of our friends that have come to your place. Mm-hmm. And Tim Noland is one of them. He's a fellow adventurer and been a good friend of Kathy and mine for so many years. And they say, well, you really need to go to the ranch and you go see James. And we just never have made it up there. Up there seems like such a far away place for us. I don't know where you're at exactly, but it just, the great white north, as I say, you know, I don't know where it's at exactly.
Yeah, we're right at the base of Mount Adams, and we're right on the gorge, right on the Columbia Gorge, just about an hour from Portland, a little over an hour from Portland.
Now, is this So are you in Oregon or Washington?
No, we're actually in Washington, but you would, if you're going to fly, you'd fly into Portland. And it's about an hour and 20 minutes or so from there. You go east up the 84, and you hit Hood River and just cross the bridge there, and it's about 20 minutes from there.
Well, I'd drive.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's I don't know if you know where Hood River, Oregon is, or...
No, I'm not at all familiar. Well, you know what? I have Google Earth. I'll find you.
Yeah, there you go. But
fascinating. You know, there's that we've had a few places that we've heard about that are like this. There's a place in Peru like this. And no one will take us there because everyone is afraid of this place. apparently you drive your car only so far, then you have to walk about a day because you can't even get the horses to go there.
Yeah.
So the locals are totally flipped out about this place. But there's another intriguing place called Skinwalker Ranch up Utah.
Yeah.
And we've heard some terrific stories about this place. I don't know if they're true or not. But I wouldn't mind going and checking that out as well.
Yeah, that Colm Kelleher, and I talked to him a lot about it, and he said that he was telling me some stories that happened there where they had these cables buried in the ground, deep trenches, you know, with these thick cables hooked up to all these cameras, and they said something came in and just pulled all the cable up, tore down the cameras, and they went over to the other end and tried to pull up the other part of the cable out of the ground, and they couldn't budge it. They couldn't even get it to move. It was so tight, you know, in the ground. But whoever this being was or whatever came through there just took all the cameras and the cables and just ripped them right up out of the ground like it was nothing.
Wow.
Amazing. But, you know, yeah, and then they had those big dogs. I don't know, those dogs, one guy shot it with a .357 at close range. Put about 5 shots into it, and it walked away like nothing happened to it. That's pretty crazy. We don't have that stuff happening here. What happens here is very benevolent, and it's always centered around empowering the individual and teaching or educational, and it's always been really positive, the things happening here at the ranch.
Yeah, that's what I've gathered from every person I've spoken to and everything I've read about you and what you're doing, that it's towards the benefit of everyone. And I just really admire that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I mean, the only problems we're having is the two-legged county people, that have a dim view of us allowing people to come up and see UFOs. For some reason, that's a real threat to them. But
that's their job. They have to do that.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. The whole town is behind us, believe it or not. But it was a ghost town. I mean, there was nothing happening here, and now it's thriving, and, you know, everybody's done really well from it. Nothing but good has come out of it, but they would like to put it back into a ghost town for some reason.
Wow. Well, hard to figure why people do things like that.
You know, I forgot to ask you if you needed a break or not. I mean, it's been such a fascinating show. I hope we're still okay. We only have maybe another 10 minutes left.
Oh, sure. Let's take a 10-minute break.
Yeah, we'll do that if you want. Yeah, there anything that you would like to talk about? I know you've got some events coming up. You have a trip to the Amazon, and I'm not sure if you have any books or DVDs or anything else you want to cover, but... we could talk about that and make sure we get those covered before we sign off.
Yeah, sure. Well, I don't have any books or DVDs, really. I mean, we have the DVDs that are available online from expeditionstv.com. It's spelled with an X, folks. It's expeditionstv.com. And, of course, those are available. But you can watch the programs for free if you want. They're all up there at no charge of our adventures in South America and elsewhere. We do have the trip going to the Amazon March 1st, and I actually feel pretty good about this one. we were able to get the price down where it was actually very affordable. It's $14.95. It's 9 days. So it's about $400 less than it was a year ago last December, let's say. Information about that is also at expeditionstv.com. The other thing I would cover, James, is my personal website, jerrywills.com. It's JerryWills.com. Basically, my job is not looking for lost cities. That's my fun.
Yeah.
For Kathy and I. But what my job actually is, well, in a nutshell, I do my best to fix people. I'm a healer, and fairly well documented for the things that I do, manifesting tissue where tissue is missing, taking away things that aren't supposed to be there, spontaneous, you know, events that take place. Mm-hmm. People with cancer, suddenly they don't have it. People with dire illnesses, suddenly it's gone. There are videos at the jerrywills.com website that explain it a lot better than I could. Mm-hmm. Fox TV has spent the past 10-12 years producing shows about me, and you can take a look at those videos. For the most part, they're all there. You can just see what you mm-hmm. think about it. If anyone needs help, they just need to contact me, and I'll do my best to help them. I work on folks worldwide, you know, mm-hmm. either in person or over the phone.
Great. Where are you based out of?
Well, right now we're living in Cottonwood, Arizona. That's about 100 and some miles north of Phoenix. We're very close to Sedona. It's just 17 miles east of us here.
Yeah, I know where Cottonwood is. I've been there before. Cute little place.
Yeah, it's kind of a nondescript, quiet little burg.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's technologically challenged, but aside from that, it's nice enough.
Yeah. There's a crazy cement plant out there, supposedly, that maybe something else. I don't know if it's a cement plant, but I know there's a big underground facility going on
there is. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's just down the mountain from Jerome. You know, in Jerome, there are, I don't know how many hundreds of miles of tunnels. That whole thing is honeycombed.
Yeah.
And Jerome's an amazing place. This whole area is amazing. I ride a BMW GS Adventure motorcycle. Mm-hmm. It's like the Jeep of motorcycles, and it goes practically anywhere it wants to.
Yeah.
A few places I'm worried if I'm going to get out of or not. But there's some great places around here to ride, and it's one of the draws for me is just to get away from people. You know, I work with people every day, and the trips help me to break away from being immersed in all of that. But riding my motorcycle, it also is very good for helping me to clear my mind and get my energy back to where it belongs.
Sounds like a beautiful bike. I've got a little Kawasaki 250 that it's a little enduro, and I like to jump on it every once in a while and take off just for the same reason.
Yeah, it's a very freeing thing, isn't it? It's like you're almost flying. I love it.
Yeah, and you got to put your attention on where you're at and let go of everything else, or you're going to end up in a ditch, you know.
That's exactly right. I still haven't gotten the hang of wearing a helmet as much as I should. I never wore a helmet till I got this bike, and as big and powerful as it is, I figured it's probably safer if I did.
Yeah. What's the have you had any more contact with these beings as far as the any kind of future things happening, or are they just kind of sitting back and observing now and seeing where we're going to take it?
Well, the way that I understand that, James, is that first off, I've had another contact. Mm-hmm. It wasn't all that I had hoped it would be, because I've been saying for the past 10 years, ever since 2001, when they didn't show up. I've been putting it out there that I really have some very specific questions I want answered, and I'm not going to take the soft shoe attitude. I want to know some things very specifically. Mm-hmm. You know, at this point, I'm 58 years old. I never thought I'd be 58, to tell you the truth, but it's hard to believe. Mm-hmm. But I have questions. And this recent thing that's happened, it was not all I had hoped it would be. It was more cryptic than anything else. And I don't know why that is, but I have a feeling that there's something that's about to happen that will explain the cryptic nature of what they had to say to me. And I really don't want to say what it was they said. I'm not trying to be mysterious. Mm-hmm. It's just... It could be taken as something very wonderful or something very terrible. And I don't really want to go into the very terrible or put that into anyone's mind. So I'm looking at it with a very positive outlook. Mm-hmm. But I just have a feeling there's something that's about to happen that they were kind of giving me a heads up about.
Well, you know, it's funny. Just recently I was getting some communication coming in along those same lines, and I share with you that frustration basically because they are being very kind of ambiguous and cryptic.
Yes.
And they're not giving me the details that I want, just as you. And you know, and I'm at a point now where I'm just saying, damn it, just lay it out. What is going down? You know what? And they're not giving me the answers, and I kind of understand that. I understand it, but still there's a part of me that just says, okay, quit dancing around this. You know, what exactly is going to be unfolding here?
And well, yeah, I'm with you, and I would certainly like to know more than I know, but that's mm-hmm. just been how I am and how I've been forever. And, maybe because, you know, it was, what, about 18 months ago, I went on a worldwide broadcast. We have our own server, our own way of transmitting video. It's not through YouTube or Ustream or any of the other servers. We have our own. And we have a complete broadcast portal that we can take with us wherever we are. Mm-hmm. And I made a broadcast that was worldwide, and I told the world, basically, who I am. And in doing so, I might have caused this ambiguity or vagueness from them because they don't want me to go and broadcast the details if they were to tell me those details. Mm-hmm. And there's a very good possibility that if they gave me details I was looking for, that I would fire up the transmitter and I'd make the announcement and there would be thousands of people tuned in to find out what it was I had to say. So I suppose on one hand, they did this knowing that that's what I would do. And so they gave me enough to keep me curious.
Yeah. They're doing the same thing with me. Exactly. They talk about a big event, a big event, and they talk almost biblical in some of it, you know, where they're saying, you know, like God is coming. It's a frequency. It's a force. It's beyond your imagination. You know, like, get rid of your images. Some major event about ready to unfold, and you know, the only thing that they told me, they said it's like a snake shedding its skin.
Yeah, that's peculiar, isn't it? Because
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add that what they had to say to me was that you're about to go through a transformation, and you don't really know what it means to be what you're about to become. So it's going to happen at a rate that you'll be able to integrate it. And they said it's going to be very much like watching a snake shedding its skin. Yeah. And it's very peculiar that you would use those terms. I mean, it would sound almost contrived for me to say the same thing, and I realize that, but it's what they yeah. said. So I don't know how else to explain it.
And I've been trying to wrap my head around, okay, what do you mean like that? I said, is there like a, what do they call it, a bifurcation or process where worlds are going to split? And I've been trying to get details on how, you know, are there going to be two different timelines or, you know, what, how this event is going to happen. And I haven't been able to just nail down the details yet on that. And maybe that's just it. Maybe I'm supposed to lay low on that because maybe there's other forces that might step in and when they know what's going to go down, try to disrupt it or screw it up, you know? So yeah. Who knows? You know, it's kind of, they're being a little, like you're saying, cryptic, you know, about the rest of the information.
Well, you and I and your listeners and friends of our listeners, you know, that we want answers. We want to understand. We want to put it into terms that we can deal with so we know what to do next.
Yeah.
And it's just frustrating not having details that you can actually put into a tangible context that would benefit anybody. I mean, we're talking in very, very vague terms between you and I about this because we don't know.
Yeah. I like that old saying, you know, praise Allah, tie your camel, you know, so I'm trying to cover all the bases, you know, I'm going to be prepared on every level. And if I decide to take off and go on a ship or ascend or whatever that, you know, it's there for the next guy.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, so that's the way I look at it, you know, but that's my plan. Looks like we're out of time here, so, I can't thank you enough. It's been great actually sitting here and having a wonderful conversation with you, and we'll have to definitely stay in touch. I'll let you know if I get any more information, and maybe we can trade notes and figure this thing out.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to share information with you, and you can share it with your listeners if you like. And in the future, we'll try to get up there. When does it warm up?
Around June. It's pretty nice.
We'll see June you in August. June.
Yeah, July and August is better, but, you know, it's real crazy then. But a lot of activity here during that time. It's like a free-for-all in the skies.
Well, we'll certainly get up and pay you a visit, James. It's been a long time coming, and I look forward to meeting you in person.
Sounds wonderful. Well, anyway, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and we've got all your information. We'll have that up on the site for people that want to know. I know you've got the jerrywills.com site, and then you have your expedition site as well. Is it?
Yeah, expeditions. Expeditions. Plural, expeditionstv.com.
TV.com, and that they can find out more about your endeavors. Yeah. Well, anyway, we're out of time. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and we'll have to talk again real soon.
It's been a privilege. Thank you for inviting me on, James.
All right. Have a great evening.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
All right, folks, we're out of time. All I can say is watch the skies, tune in, go within, do your meditation time, and if you get the answers, be sure and share them with us because we're all in this together. Anyway, have a great evening. Good night.